How are you?
Good, Rob. How are you doing today?
Good.
Great, thanks. Got a little reverb, I think.
I just tossed out the quintessential question. I asked everybody what was on their mind, so.
Oh, good for you. So you had a little meeting before me.
Yeah, we did. And I think Dean needs to take back everything he said about you.
That nap guy. You know what I was doing is I was looking at Monday thinking, oh, I don't have any. I just got off the other call at 2 o'clock, looked on my schedule, nothing, 2 o'clock. I go, oh, that's okay. Oh no, it's Wednesday. What is this Crandall Hulse folder doing here? Oh, I've got a call. Crap. That's, I don't know. What is it? Is it age? Is it your brain is tired?
All of the above.
Anyway, what is on your mind?
Well, I can tell you from a marketing perspective, we are hoping after, I think, four or five tries to change our team name. It's been quite a lesson to learn what Morgan Stanley Legal and Compliance will not allow you to put in a team name.
Right.
So, nothing. But we think maybe we got it this time. If what we submitted is the Kairos Legacy Group.
Okay. So tell me.
So, well, I'm going to pass the buck over to Dean since it's his idea, so.
You're on mute.
Yep.
There you go.
Kairos, we think, sir, am I getting a lot of reverb? Do I need to call in?
You're okay.
Okay.
Pretty good.
Kairos, Rob, is a Greek term for the concept of time. And there's actually two Greek terms for time. One is chronos, where we get chronological. But kairos is more it's found in the New Testament, I think, what did we say, 40 some times. So it's both a secular term and what we think could be a more spiritual term, because most people in the church would at least heard of kairos. And that's kind of like a dog whistle to people of faith. But we really wanted to have legacy. We really like this concept of stewardship, but stewardship is a non-starter. By the way, I don't know if you heard, were you guys on the district call yesterday with Rob Meredith? He mentioned the person he had on that Morgan Stanley hired from Barron's to work with teens very much went into this concept of stewardship. I thought that was pretty interesting. And yet we can't use stewardship in our team name. So whatever. But we think Kairos, we can run with a lot of directions on that. But it's really the concept of time is short, and it's time to plan your legacy. What am I leaving out, Brad?
Well, my understanding from the biblical perspective is what separates it from chronological time is that its use in the New Testament is that it's God's intentional time. In other words, that he shows up at Kairos time, which conveys the time that he intends to show up, not early, not late, but according to his will. And so we think merging the word kairos, and as Dean said, it does have a really good dual meaning, the secular meaning as well as the biblical meaning. But we think merging that with legacy means that, now is the right time to be thinking about your legacy, simply because you don't know how much time you have left.
Yeah, the kairos just reading from Google, signifies a proper or opportune time for action. That's what I was trying to land on. I couldn't think of.
I think, you know, there's a, my daughter went to a Jesuit school there in Indy, and she was a member of Kairos.
Yeah. Yeah, there's a lot of church groups that have named themselves after that. Somebody's getting bad feedback.
Rob, did she go to Brebeuf?
Yes.
Yeah, my daughter's the campus minister director there now.
Oh, really? Wonderful.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was, I think it was harder than college for her. She learned more. She took religion, and she said it was one of the hardest courses she ever took and was one of the best. You know, so it's it was a great experience for her. Well, good. Okay, we got the name. Now what?
Well, next come the materials to go with it, and even more importantly, the story. So, you know, Dean and I want to create a story that that people will resonate with, either at a secular level or a Christian level. And then we've been saving our money to make a video, a custom video, just for the team. So but we, all these things have to be in place before we start shooting. But, yeah, I think we're moving in the right direction here. If it gets approved.
Dean, why don't you try muting for a second, and let me just see if that helps Brad. All right.
Did that help Brad?
That helped Brad, yeah. It's Dean.
Yeah.
All right, Dean. You've been busted again.
Hey, we've only been using Zoom for a year, you know. He's going to catch on one of these days.
I know. It's just technology. It's just so hard.
I don't want to call in. I want to use this microphone.
Okay. okay, so you're going to make a video. And what are you going to do with the video?
Tell stories.
So I love your legacy focus. It's the most important thing you can do for a human being is make them feel, hopefully, make them feel as though their time on the earth has been of value and that there is some legacy that they leave behind for earth dwellers. And their life has been important to some degree. And giving that people, in the end, not enough people spend any time on that. And wealthy people have the ability to do it, but, you know, it's one of those things they never get around to. And so this is the kind of coaching and counseling that they need to get this stuff done. So how do you create a sense of urgency, which is the biggest challenge you have when you're dealing with everything that isn't urgent?
Well, I mean, so kind of a personal story from my perspective. 3 weeks ago, we were really caught off guard when my wife had a heart attack. And the thing about that is if you were to ask 20 people who knew both of us, and ask them the question, who's more likely to have a heart attack, Brad or Char? 20 people would have said Char. I mean, would have said Brad. She's very, very healthy, very physically active. I mean, she's just one of the last people on the planet you would think would have a heart attack. You know, by the grace of God, she survived it in the one stent, and she's going to be fine. The doctors tell her she'll have a full recovery. But the point is that, you know, when we went out to dinner that Friday night, we weren't thinking about being in the emergency room 6 hours later.
No.
And so the only thing I think we can do is try to tell stories to underscore the obvious. And we all know this. We just tend to deny it or not think about it. We really don't know when it's our time. And to presume that we always have another day and we just keep putting things off, putting things off, putting things off, maybe human nature, but, I think by telling stories, maybe we can help people think more clearly about the importance. And the thing that occurs to me about that, Rob, is that I think if I tell that story to, 50 people, I'll bet you a majority of them are going to know in the back of their minds a story just like it. It's going to remind them of something they already knew, because I think it's a story we probably all can resonate, or at least we've heard of somebody that was in a situation like that. So I think that's a beginning point. I mean, we need to work on this. We need to tweak it. But that was the first thought that came to my mind when you asked me how do we motivate somebody to do something that they may or may not necessarily want to do.
So the outcomes that you're looking for, if you had the ideal outcome of, let's say somebody says, okay, I want to hire you as my consultant and I have $10 million. What is the outcome that their plan would look like in terms of, in your mind?
I think for me, Rob, the desired outcome would be to know that that person or that couple intentionally thought through what it was they wanted their finish line and their legacy to look like. It may not be perfect. It may not work out that way, but I've kind of come to the conclusion that Christ is most honored when we are intentional about how we think about how we spend our time, how we spend the resources. And it's not the same for everybody, but better to be thoughtful about it and to come up with a plan than to have no plan at all and just kind of be buffed back and forth by whatever winds are blowing that day. So for me, it would be the completion of a plan that has intentionality with respect to what a finish line looks like and with respect to what family legacy looks like. Even better if those conversations at some point in time include family members. And I hope I don't embarrass Dean, but about 6 weeks ago or so, he wrote a marvelous email and sent it to all of his children and talked about the importance of what he and Gina were trying to accomplish with respect to their finish line and how they're thinking about their legacy. And among other things, asked them to be thinking about a time when the entire family could gather and go through the rivets exercise that I think everybody but Caleb is familiar with, which has the purpose of helping a family think through what are our common family values and how can we build a mission statement around those values that we've identified as being most important to the family.
Yeah, that's a fun exercise, isn't it?
It is. It really is. And I think, and so the point that I'm making is that in my mind, Dean is an example of the intentionality of moving forward. Now, he may not get the kids in the room as quickly as he wants to, but he's planted the seed. He's helped them understand where he and Gina are coming from. And he's moving towards a time when the family can participate and think through the ideas of family values and family legacy. And so part of my desired outcome would be that for every client we touch.
Yeah. Yeah. It's just like it's like your team getting together and putting your values down and your purpose and mission and vision of where you want to go. A family can do the exact same thing. The other is, you know, is that sense of preparation. You know, where you may never use the ladder that is sitting in your child's room, and if there was a fire, they'd open the window, put out the ladder, and climb down, right? But just right. Having it in the room makes you feel better, right? Mm-hmm. Having the fire extinguisher in the kitchen, just in case, right, makes you feel better. Having that fire extinguisher in your boat makes you feel better. Carrying bear spray on a long hike in the woods where there's bears makes you feel better. You may never use it. Knowing the question I always am interested to see if people are willing to ask is, okay, Dean, tomorrow you're not here anymore. Are you prepared?
We've from a legal standpoint, setting up trusts, LLCs, yeah. From, you know, our children may not even know where our farms are. I mean, literally. If you had to drive them there today, I don't know that they could find it. So no. And as far as making sure those values are nailed down, no. I mean, I think we're 80% of the way there. It's not like we're blessed. We don't have any black sheep children. So none of them has gone off the reservation. We're not in any danger there, but I want to make sure they don't, you know? And we want to watch them for the next several years to see how they handle money. So far, so good. So far, they're all thrifty. They like buying used furniture. They don't have to drive a fancy car. Yeah, they're millennials. They like their trips. They like to get on airplanes more than baby boomers did and go places. But, you know, more than anything, it's what type of values can we instill in them while I've got another, you know, 20 years worth of influence over them.
Yeah, it's, I mean, these are wonderful conversations and, you know, some people, you know, have serious illnesses and live a long time, but they're prepared every day just in case they don't. Other people are oblivious to it. But when you get to be my age, you know, my partner had a heart attack and he had prostate cancer all in a 2-year period. You know, and the average person I know has had one little visitor of one of those kinds, almost across the board. You know, it's either heart or AFib or it's, you know, or it's cancer. I mean, it's just kind of rampant when you get to be our age. And so you become less, how should I say it? You're sort of prepared for that visitor. And you kind of deal with it and you value every day, value life. Yeah. And preparing for the eventuality is not as way out there as you take a 50-year-old and try and get them to prepare for that. They're just not interested. I prepared at 50 because of my job, because I wanted to know what it was like for my 80-year-old clients to go through this. So I bought all the products. You know, I did the Family Foundation, the Dynasty Trust, the, you know, the Grat, the Cupert, I did it all. And by the time I had it all in place and I retired at 60, it was relevant, right? And now at 75, it's very relevant. So that to me is your biggest challenge, is getting people at 50 to do this when they should, when they have the capability, when insurance is cheaper, when everything is better and they're healthy to do this stuff rather than wait till they're 70. You can get any 70-year-old to do this. Getting a 50-year-old that's wealthy or has significant money to slow down long enough to set up a family foundation or a community foundation is is harder. But having the experience, the advantage that you all have is that you go through these events by the dozens. They go through it once in their life, maybe twice, with their parents passing, right? Maybe an aunt. But you've got, in a year, you'll have, you know, five or six people pass away. And so you're dealing with it constantly. And I think your best reference is to have them as prepared as humanly possible, and then for you guys and your whole team to be there for them on those days when it is hard. You know, there's the red letter days, the birth, but there's also the death, right? There's the wedding, but there's also the divorce. So you're constantly dealing with the good and the sad of life. And you don't want to be there just for the birth. You want to be there for the death. You want to be there for the wedding. You want to be there for the divorce. You want to be there and to have a professional group of advisors that you can count on. So this is important for you. Build a enthusiastically endorsed network of professionals that are there to advise and coach your clients during these difficult red letter days. So you have a psychologist that specializes in divorce. You have a grief counselor, a psychologist that specializes in grief counseling. And all different grief is different. You know, there's the loss of your parents, which is horrible, but what about the loss of a child? Okay. So there's different kinds of grief that you're dealing with and different people that are better at certain things. And there's organizations that help that are very, very good and rarely help. I volunteered to become a grief counselor when I was in Indianapolis and found it very rewarding, particularly for children who have lost parents or children that have lost brothers and sisters. And St. Luke's there in Indianapolis had mm-hmm. That's where we met. And I did that for a couple of years. It was wonderful. Mm-hmm. But having that and so your associates that you meet in these organizations that are Christians, you can have a network of those people that can be there for all of your clients, but particularly for the ones that you know you're going to be most affiliated with, which is going to be Christians. So think about that. You know, I always tell people, build your enthusiastically endorsed list, and nobody does. Okay. Why? Because it's just like legacy planning. You guys aren't any different. It's a great idea. I'll do that sometime. So
let me ask you a question.
Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, early on, you asked the question, if you were not here tomorrow, are you prepared? Would you also ask this question, if you were not here tomorrow, is your family prepared?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, there's you and then it's them. And Brad, it's a perfect segue. I mean, it's a perfect second follow-up question because, you know, I always say, I was going to close a client one time and he said, well, I can do all this stuff myself. And I said, yeah, but can Nedra?
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah, for some reason I've been really successful with second and third generation people from wealthy families. And I've taken the time after I've developed a relationship with them to ask them, I was just kind of curious, what did your parents do to prepare you to receive the wealth that you have today? And to a person, the answer was nothing. It just landed in our lap, and we had to learn. we were thrown into the deep end of the pool and had to learn how to swim. And it's just, so anyway, I think those are two really good questions.
I'm working with my 7-year-old granddaughter, helping her to build a portfolio. She says, "Bobo, I don't care about stocks." I said, "Yes." I said, "There's some fun stocks like Splunk." Oh, she loved that name, Splunk. I said, "How about Whoopsie?" She remembers. I'll give her the craziest names, and she goes, "How's Splunk doing? How's Whoopsie doing?" I'm infecting her brain. You see, I'm getting in there, even though she is rejecting me, and her parents are like, "Dad, will you leave this poor child alone?" I said, "No, I want her to be prepared." Oh, psycho grandfathers. But anyway, it's really good. Yeah. And so the question becomes, whose job is that? Is that your job? The parents' job? It's kind of a combination, right?
Yeah, sure. Yeah. I think it's something we can certainly facilitate.
And Brad, what does that really mean? Are they prepared? And did they prepare you? I mean, I guess we could have a fire drill, right? I used to play a game called when Marcia didn't do this often, but every once in a while she'd get frustrated with us and say, "I'm going on strike. I'm not preparing any dinner. You guys are not cooperating. You're not doing your chores. I'm going on strike." And I'd go to the kids. I'd go, "Okay, everybody, Mommy just got run over by a steamroller, so we've got to do everything." And they go, "Oh, good. That sounds like fun." So we'd have to do the laundry. We'd have to do the meals, and so you could go, "Hey, parents just got run over by a steamroller. What are you guys going to do?"
Yeah, Don Miller down in Nashville talks a lot about every successful movie has kind of the same storyline. That's, there's a guide, there's a hero, there's a villain, and we are the guide. We're like Yoda. Luke Skywalker, the client is Luke Skywalker. He's the one who really has to fight the bad guy, but we're the Yoda. We're the person. So when you said whose job is it to prepare them, it's a both, mm-hmm. We're there to guide them, but they have to do the heavy lifting.
Yeah. That's the hero's journey. Famous. Yeah. It's the basis of most stories. You're right. And, we're all on a hero's journey. And by the way, what are we trying to defeat? Who is the dragon that in the hero's journey that we're trying to defeat? Just an aside, it's your ego. If you read all about hero's journeys, the end result is defeating your own ego and becoming a selfless person. The ultimate enlightened person. And it's a never-ending quest, because as soon as you think that you are fully enlightened and completely selfless, that just means that your ego is bigger than anybody else's.
It's definitely, it's interesting for me to think about, having kids that are probably, Rob, more like your grandkids' age and different things like that, where how do I, hearing 50-year-olds talk about how they want to, teach their kids now that are a little older, how do I plant seeds now? How do I do those things to really engage them at their age appropriate level, so that hopefully by the time they're you know, late teenagers, early 20s, you know, at some point perhaps taking over some of my wealth when I'm 55, that it's a lot of little conversations and big thing or little things so that, you know, 30 years down the road, you know, they'll just be way more up to speed and ahead of the curve instead of having to have, you know, a big download within a short period of time. So this is, these conversations are really helpful for me to hear now in thinking through how I engage them in that part of the process.
Speaking of young children, the most important thing you can do is give them responsibility and hold them accountable for that. You can give them appropriate rewards for it, but to teach them the value of work and compensation in return for work and make it fun, make it a game, but make it. I mean, we're all blessed, many of us at my age, we're blessed to be able to have paper routes. It was an amazing responsibility, you know, and you know, you had to do everything to manage the money and have a budget and, you know, just go and pay people and spend money and buy newspapers and collect money. And so it was the entire capitalist system all wrapped up in a little paper route. Most kids don't have that ability. So you can find something though that they can do to duplicate that. And there's probably nothing more important than teaching your children the value of work and the benefits of capitalism. So of all the things for young children that I would recommend, it would be that.
We were on a call yesterday, and I forget who you quoted, Dean, but I think Dean quoted, I think it was Howard Dayton, you know, comparison is the enemy of contentment. And so those, like that thought with what you just said, Rob, talking about, you know, getting your kids to work in the reality where, you know, a lot of our kids or my kids are probably growing up in a little different environment than I did, where comparison, where, hey, well, so-and-so doesn't have to work. They just play on their AAU sports teams or whatever. And being able to teach, like, no, that's not what, that's fine. If for others, that's fine. But I'm trying to do things to drive your behavior now, irrespective to what the rest of the world does or other people do.
Yeah, I mean, and the fact that they have to pay a portion of their college education, they have to work in the summers, they have to. Yeah, I mean, if a kid is going to be NCAA scholarship, then you're working for that, you know. But you're not just enjoying your summer all the time. It's, yeah, you have fun, but you work. And in terms of getting the fit, the thing, Caleb, I would say to you is you've got to project your brain into the brain of a 65-year-old. You got to become a 65. You know, one of the things we learned was styles. You know, it's not just, you know, being matching the style of your client, which is what you should be doing. Your client is an aggressive person. You become an aggressive person. Start, you know, your client's an engineer, you become like an engineer. They want to know how the watch works, you teach them how the watch works. So, but there's also that age difference. How a 65-year-old thinks compared to the way you think. You've got to literally kind of become an actor and become a 65-year-old and think like they do when you're with them, because they will respect you if you know what you're talking about, right? So it's more important when you're young in our business to be very, very smart. You got to be smart about you. So being a financial planning expert helps because you know more than they do about everything to do with financial planning. That's a big advantage. But thinking like they do is very important. And understanding that the red letter day of retirement is not just a chance to get a 401k rollover. It's a traumatic experience. Whether they're leaving their business or their profession or whatever they're leaving, particularly for the breadwinner, it's trauma. And for the person that's going to have the breadwinner at home from then on, it's trauma. And you've got to spend time thinking about that and what that means to that person, because they are not prepared for that no matter what they say. Okay? So those are the things that you can learn now and not have to wait till you're 60 to go through it yourself and go, damn, I didn't realize this was this hard. I used to love those rollovers.
I'll give you a little tip though, Caleb. If you want to get into the mindset of a 65-year-old thereabouts, well, first of all, you can come and hang out with me a little bit, but just get used to talking about all of your aches and all of your pains and all of the things that are going wrong with your body. Uh-huh. And you will fit in really well.
Well, you can also just say, I talked to my dad the other day. And this is what he's going
through. Yeah, no, one of the guys I used to talk with, he's like, well, I used to play basketball, then I switched to tennis, and then tennis got a little too much, so now I golf. So it's kind of getting into that mentality over time.
Yes. I still walk, but a lot of the guys take carts. All right. One of the things I wanted to commit to was holding you guys accountable for something that you're going to do in the next month, so that we make progress together. So what is that that you would like to achieve between now and our next session?
Well, I would say if our team name gets approved, that we start to develop the story and build out the materials to go along with it. But most importantly, the story. You know, we have this really cool team name, but I'm anticipating that once we make the announcement that we're changing the name of the team, the natural question is going to be, why did you name it that?
Well, and
I think we ought to all be really thoughtful and be prepared and be on the same page with how we're going to answer that question.
It's great. I think you did a nice job, by the way. Okay. I know you haven't been doing it 50 times, but you've done it a few times and you explained it to me and I think it came across very well. So don't feel like you've got to start over. I think you're really on the path. And, you know, I think we spent most of the time today talking about that. What is it? What is your legacy? You know, what is it that, how prepared are you to create that legacy? What stage is it in, et cetera? And wouldn't, you know, goal setting is magic. I mean, you all are where you are because you've set goals and you achieved them, right? There's a lot of people that never set goals, never got on the path, never achieved them. And so this is no more than just another goal setting session. But the power of focus and the power of concentration, the power of bringing it, your brain into alignment with your values and your actions will achieve amazing things in your life. Things that you just can't even imagine that you could do, but you can. And so that's what you bring to it. You are the goal setters. You're the coaches that help those people set their goals and then hold them accountable to those goals and then make the necessary adjustments to achieve those goals. That's the key to goal setting, isn't setting a goal and hoping you get there. The key is striving to achieve it and making the necessary adjustments to reach it and setting timelines for it. So remember the incremental parts of goal setting, and that's what you want to do. Don't let people just make a goal. You're the coaches. You're the help that help them get there. You're the attention to detail. You're the focus. You're the accountability coaches. And then they will get there. But that's what you do. And you make just what I did, which was, okay, by next month, what would you like to achieve towards this goal? Let them set it. But then you're the accountability coach for doing that. And that will be revolutionary. Okay? In terms of our business, no one is doing that. That's a differentiator. That's what you're looking for. What makes us different from everybody else? Okay?
Okay, thank you, sir.
Thank you.
I used to think that was a lot like a personal trainer, but our business isn't like personal training. It's to tell somebody to keep doing push-ups is one thing, but we have to have a whole different skill set. So I think the competency, the credentials are huge. And I'll just say one more thing. This morning, Gina and I, my wife and I were talking about where we stand right now and as far as really financially. And to your point, Rob, in 1985, as a young pup with Edward Jones, they had us read a book by Vanita Van Caspel. I don't know if she wrote a couple of financial books. And at 1985, I set a net worth goal. And you know what? We're pretty much on track of hitting that. But that number has been in my brain now for, 35 years. And it is amazing how once you get something in your brain, it'll track toward that.
Yeah. Everything that you do kind of tracks towards that.
Yeah.
It's subconscious. It's happening when you're sleeping. It's very strange, but it does work. And if you can teach people the magic of it, the true magic of it, you'll change their lives. You've got to get them to believe it works, but you guys are examples of it. It just works. Yeah. I am. I mean, I set goals. I set goals every 5 years and they all came true on that fifth year. It was so strange. Exactly the way I wanted them. I just, you know, I've been a blessed character. All right. We'll see you guys. Have fun. Make it a great month.
All right. See you. Thanks, Rob. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Bye.
Thanks, everybody. Bye.